put off by the two parties, both the Republicans and Democrats, sold them a bill of goods. They don't see their lives improving. They see huge health care costs. These are individuals that voted for both times in 2008 and 2012 for Barack Obama. They just wanted something different. And they're just tired of having their views downgraded. Like, they get disparaged because you believe in a faith. You believe in family. You believe in certain things. They just want jobs. And that's why they voted for Donald Trump. And they don't trust the media. They definitely don't trust either the political parties. They just wanted somebody different. And Donald Trump just happened to fill that bill.
Why do you, there's been much written about the divide in this country. How do you see the divide? If I could throw it out there, the way I've lived in small town America, having lived in North Dakota for 14 years, I don't see a huge racial divide in this country. You know, yeah, does it flare up? Yes. And you want to know why? Because there's idiots among us. Okay. But we lived in a society in the military where it didn't matter what color you were. And we didn't have racial issues there. The biggest issue was that sometimes people just had never been around. You know, you had people, you know, that I don't care, you could pick one. You had black people who hadn't been around that many white people in their life. And all of a sudden they were around them all the time. And sometimes they were nervous or they weren't comfortable around it. And you had the same thing with Hispanics around, whites and blacks. You had the same thing with whites or Asians. And so, but into this melting pot, you're all thrust. And there's not too many problems. So I think most Americans, are predisposed to give people a chance. And I think obviously that's cool.
Right.
I don't see the divide as a racial divide. I see it as a perspective divide. The middle of the nation, everything but the coast and the major cities, look at the world and say, I support myself. I want you to help create jobs. And if you can help create jobs and economic activity and opportunity, I can do the rest. I think you have big town America that says, why aren't you doing this for me? Why haven't you created this? And I see that as a difference in perspective. And I see the people that, a lot of the people that are now the hardcore, you know, conservatives, you know, had no place to go but Donald Trump. The hardcore, but there's what, about 35% of the electorate that elects the president. So you have 35% on the Democratic side that will always stay Democratic. You have about 30% on the Republican side. That leaves 35% in the middle that elect the president every time. They elected George Bush. They then elected Barack Obama, right? And now they've elected, Donald Trump. You know, go figure, right? Okay, so who are these people? And to write them off and call them ignorant is in itself ignorant. So invitation to those who write that. Go get to know the middle of the country. Go get to know small town America again. And trust me, you want to know what you're going to find? Good people, hardworking people, honest people, but they're tired of the bullshit that comes out of Washington, D.C. And they would rather, they would certainly, and to me what the vote was about, we'll roll the dice on him because he's at least talking about jobs, right? Because we're sick of her and everybody like her.
And that's my take. Point is, there was that book called, I've ordered it from Amazon. I just read excerpts and different speeches called Shattered, written by one of Washington Post reporter. Another one was a New York Times reporter, and they covered politics. And they were very sympathetic to Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. But what they said is, when they read her book, is what you just said. You've written off this group of people. When you didn't have a message and you called this group of people deplorable, it's just like Elizabeth Warren, the Massachusetts senator, called them, well, those people who voted for Donald Trump are racist. It's totally off base. And then the problem is you've got the mainstream media from the national media. And if you Google it or anybody Googles it, you look at most of them come from the Ivy League colleges of Harvard, Yale, Princeton, up in that area, who've never been out to the rural community. They go out there and they meet four people or meet somebody at a diner and think they know rural America's issues.
Right.
And they just kind of dismiss these small towns. I grew up in a little small town, and I liked it.
Right.
But not everybody's going to grow up in an urban center. But when you discount the views and the values, because the people in middle America, the middle class, they don't like to see violence in the street because you don't like someone's viewpoint.
Right.
That's what they see. What happened at Berkeley. People may not like Ann Coulter, but she still has a right to speak. You don't need to protest and create violence.
Yeah, you could protest, but violent protest, and she can't speak,
no.
And she's physically going to be harmed. Like, what the hell is that? That's what we would. That's what people condemned in the South relative to the civil rights movement. Are you kidding me? And now that's Berkeley, California, and that's okay.
And that's going on throughout college campuses.
Right.
They're not wanting to have certain speakers. When I went to college, just like when you went to college, you get people from different ethnic groups, different economic groups. You get to hear different ideas. Not, I don't like that person's idea, so I'm going to protest. What the heck is that? And that's what rankles middle America. And then they see all the violence that, well, especially with law enforcement, all the law enforcement officers who were killed all last year.
Disgusting.
And it's just people are like, enough's enough.
All right, let me read you a text message, or let me read you an email. Stand by. My vote doesn't matter is really just an excuse, rationalizing for not making an effort. The real reason, one, I don't care. Two, I'm too lazy. Three, I don't know shit about the issues. And four, all of the above. That's from Ohio, man. Yeah, how about that?
But you get a lot of people who, like we said, my vote doesn't count. I don't want to read, or I only want to get it from one source, and that's it. And it's like, gee, you wonder why we got our problems today.
Yeah. No. So to me, why go back to voting? You know. Look, voter identification. You know, to me, if you're going to vote, you ought to have an ID. You ought to have something that proves your identity. And don't tell me to bring my electrical bill, okay? You know, bring something that substantiates your residence, okay? And you can vote, you know. We don't care, but
it's ironic you say that though, because you can't cash a check without having some type of like an ID card or a driver's license or something. You can't just, I don't understand why you can show up at a polling place, though. I'm going to vote, but I don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
Well,
you read those stories and say, look, okay, so you don't have an ID? You don't, like, I don't get that. Like, I don't understand how somebody thinks that's, like, a good way to do this. You know, so, you know, figure it out, you know, and we're more than happy to support people and do whatever it takes. But, you know, nothing, just come with nothing and vote. Come on. Where the hell does that happen?
Then you wonder why there's all these voter irregularities across. It's just, it's unimaginable to me. There was one gentleman when I was flying back for reserve drill, and he was trying to get on the airplane, but he didn't have any ID. And I'm like, you really think you're going to get on a plane without any ID? And he was getting upset. And I'm like, what the heck is your problem? But it's the same thing with voters. They should make it simple. You have a driver's license or a state ID, you can vote. Leave it at that.
My guest for a few more minutes here till the end of the third hour is John Ubaldi, and we're complaining about life here on a Wednesday. And email. What's the number one issue / challenge that John sees for the nation? John, you've heard me. The number one challenge I think that's before the nation is a challenge of leadership at all levels. that we have people that don't really understand it, and as a result, they're driving it into the ditch. And you could pick any issue you want to, from immigration to foreign policy to infrastructure, and it's to debt. And what you see are easy, cowardly ways out, and you don't see too many people that want to face the music, make responsible choices with government restraining itself and its spending and within the concept of a limited government.
Well, but that's the best point, is no one's held accountable for their actions. There's always some justified, well, it's not my fault, or this is the cause of this. And this is what we're seeing. I mean, the state that you come from in California is a disaster economically. I mean, there's just a report I just was reading today about the huge unfunded pension liabilities the state's facing.
Tell me about that. It's one of my favorite topics. And I'll tell you what, for everybody listening out there, if you want some interesting reading, Google this, unfunded public pension liability, okay, and then click on news, okay, and look at the articles. These are pensions that you for a city, a state, even the nation, you have to contribute money so that it grows with your employees. If you don't contribute, you create a gap in your funding level, as opposed to your funded level, your 100% funded level, right? And that's a political decision. Talk about California for a second.
And that's you're absolutely correct. And now that, I think Dan Walters, who's a columnist for the Bee, and his article is syndicated throughout California, he mentions that California's the CalPERS and the teachers' retirement system were woefully optimistic of what they were going to get in a return, and now they barely made enough that they had to do. They can't even cover what they need to cover. And then the gas tax they're taking from that and shoring up their pension system. And you wonder why they have hard times fixing the roads, bridges, and highways.
The article that I'm looking at is, and this is just an example, all right? This is out of the Sacramento Bee, written by a guy named Dan Walters, blah, 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 and talks about funds going up. It has the sixth worst. Okay, California's unfortunate status is confirmed in a new report from Pew Charitable Trust, which found in 2015 the state's two biggest pension funds had the nation's sixth worst record of reducing unfunded liabilities, gathering just 79% of the $18.9 billion they needed to keep their pension debts from rising. California status has worsened since then. In 2015, Pew reported the California Public Employees Retirement System and the California State Teachers Retirement System had 74% of what they needed to meet pension obligations. Okay, now, I will tell you this. California might be sixth. Check out Illinois and New Jersey. And you're going to see, numbers below 50%. So CalPERS at 74%, while they may say they're the sixth worst in the nation, right? There's a big difference between being in the top three and being beyond that. California can close that gap at 74%. Illinois and New Jersey, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And it's going to get worse in New Jersey because they have a gubernatorial race coming up in 2018, and the same thing with New Jersey. And I know Governor Rumner in Illinois was trying to push the tide back, but it looks like he's going to be ousted. And the legislature or whoever, they're going to pick somebody else who's going to say, let's just raise taxes. Let's don't worry about this. Let's pass the buck. And it's just going to get worse.
The in Illinois, I want to say a number of years ago, they announced pension reform, and what they did was they made new employees were no longer be part of the pension; they'd be part of a 401k. So they said that that we've closed the gap. Well, they really hadn't, right? What they did was, because we're not going to take any more state employees into the defined benefit plan, right? We say we've eliminated this debt, this part of the debt. Well, no, you haven't. You just switched them to a different plan, but there's still all the rest of this debt there. Right, so I guess in 20 years we'll be happy, because, and then the poor state employees, what happened to them? They went from a pretty good defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan, which is a 401k, right? Which means while you're raising your kids, you tend not to contribute to it because you're spending your money elsewhere, and you don't have as much money at retirement. So you just got your really good retirement. You just got that thing screwed. Right, in the sake of, but we saved all this money. But they really hadn't. They're just not going to go into as far into debt as they thought they were. And again, the biggest problem is politicians who say, well, our forecasted rate of return in this plan is 10%. The market gave us 18. So we're not going to make this year's contribution because the market made it for us. Oh.
Correct.
That's how they play this game. You know, and then with that money we were going to contribute, we can do these improvements and not raise taxes. Aren't we smart? That's the game that gets played in public pensions. And it kills them.
And then the other factor, I mean, I know in California's case, is they become overly optimistic of what the returns are going to be. And they, even every pension manager said, no, that is way optimistic. And then when they don't meet obligations, because we get into recessions are a cyclical kind of thing. And then when there's no money, there's like New Jersey. I know under Chris Christie, he kind of touts that he saved New Jersey, but there's a couple periods he put the bare minimum. It's like only paying the bare minimum off of a credit card. You really think something's going to be fixed? And that's what a lot of these political leaders did.
That's why I say the whole leadership thing is it's depressing. And I, you know, more, you know, interesting. More and more of my friends don't even watch the news anymore because they just get tired of it's just stupid. You know, you can pick stupid Republicans or stupid Democrats, but when will you solve all our problems? When do you do the right things? Yesterday, the subject was 8 years of Barack Obama foreign policy. Where did it leave us as a nation?
Yeah, that left us where we have the problem in North Korea, Iran, Syria, Russia, China. Yeah, I can go off the list on that one.
Yeah, how do we say thank you for that as a nation? Like, okay, socially, gender equity, you know, okay, got it, that's all great. But as the president, don't you have a moral obligation? You know, it's just so, you know, I have more and more friends. I don't know about you, but they say, yeah, nuts.
They say, knock yourself out. Did you like to read this stuff? But it's depressing, man.
No, it is. It's the worst, man. It's the worst. I will tell you, the least depressing news that I watch is PBS NewsHour. And I record that and I watch it. And I think it does longer stories. It does more thorough stories and more balanced. I cannot, you know, for instance, you know, the headlines are just stupid. You know, every day it's all clickbait in my opinion. The AP does quality, news work. Reuters does quality news work. If you go to Fox and if you go to CNN, all you get is clickbait. And
correct. I would agree with that. Yeah, New York Times, Washington Post, you don't get much analysis out of them.
Well, you know, and the Times and the Post, they have great writers, but I think that their columnists, you know, if you can exclude them and just do news there, I think you find good news writers. But the rest of it is so, you know, on the websites that you go to, I mean, the headlines are written to be clicked on. And so, I don't know, it just adds to this symphony of pain that I know a lot of guys that don't want to be a part of that.
And that's the truth, and that goes back to your point of leadership. This is it's just alienated these group of voters. They're like, I'm sick of it. Nothing gets done. You guys make money over us, and my life, my wages haven't gone up. We're seeing all the costs go up, but nothing tangible to me or my family.
All right. So you wrote the thing about GDP on Friday?
I wrote it on Friday. It's going to get posted. I sent it to my editor. It's going to get posted today.
Okay. All right. And then what's the next topic? What are you working on next?
The next one I'm working on, I just got formulated, is talking about the Trump voters. Who are these Trump voters? And much like we discussed. Which is a kind of misnomer. A lot of people believe that they aren't shocked when they find out that these guys actually voted for Barack Obama twice.
Right.
They're simple.
Yeah. Yes. And so it's an interesting group when you actually try to go out there and meet them. Who are they? And what did they want? I think, to me, there's a story there, because the middle of the country isn't happy. They've been promised stuff and agriculture gets more mechanized, so you need less people. Factories that have gone, a lot of them have been in the center of the country, and nothing's replaced them. What about us?
Correct.
What about us?
And this is why people just said, you tried everything else, let's go with this guy.
Yeah, why not? And I heard that a ton. Why not him? He talks about jobs. He talks about making America great again. I don't want more of Washington, D.C., and that's what she is. So, anyway. Yep. All right. Tell everybody how they find you again.
They can go to just go on the website and go to UvaldiReports.com, and you will find me. You can see me on Facebook, Twitter, and I'll be there.
All right, bud. Thanks for the visit.
All right. Take it easy.
And there you have it. John Ubaldi of the Ubaldi Reports here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it. Yeah, how about that? Boom. Done. My thanks. Chris Woodbridge for coming on. My thanks to Will Cosentini for coming on. My thanks to the Ubaldi Reports for coming on. Yeah, all that. All that one gigantic cavalcade of entertainment. And you will hear all of that immediately following me signing off here. So, got that to look forward to. Tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit of, we're going to talk Boulder Crest Retreat stuff again. So it's one of the kind of emerging technologies, and they've got some cool stuff going on. So, in fact, they've got a class in session. So if you missed it, Boulder Crest has embraced the concept of post-traumatic growth. And so we are going to talk about that. Post-traumatic growth. We'll talk about that. And then Phil Smith's going to join us. He's supposed to join us today, but he'll join us tomorrow. Remember, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast. All that helps us do what we do. Another programming note. If you have a friend that is looking for a career, looking for a career in construction, go ahead and make sure you let them know that Turner Construction is looking for leaders. And if they send an email to myself here at All Marine Radio, mac.allmarineradio@gmail.com, that'll get to me. Go to the website, you'll find it. Or you can go to the 100 Entrepreneurs website and email Bob Nielsen. We'll get you in touch, and we'll put you in touch with Turner. Turner is looking for leaders. All right, and they're looking for you. If you're a leader, if you're a veteran and you're a leader, Turner Construction is looking for you. You don't need any background in construction. That's not what they're worried about. They'll teach you that kind of stuff. And finally, all you Mustangs out there, pay attention. The Marine Corps Mustang Association, comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services, who share a common background. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commissioner warrant officer who who has risen from the enlisted ranks, owes its origin to the wild horse of the American plains, and was a distortion of the Spanish term Mustango. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985, as a non-profit veteran service organization. In the 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and encouragement of young Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military career and their civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. You can also find them on Facebook, Marine Corps Mustang. Search on it, find them, and like them. Help them spread the word and continue to do the work they do. So if you're a Mustang, join them. It's your responsibility. With that said, on Wednesday, All Marine Radio. Out.